You're listening to the Work From Everywhere podcast by Adventurely. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the very first episode of the Work From Everywhere podcast by Adventurely. I'm your host, Mita, the founder and CEO of Adventurely. If you've been following our work, then you might be familiar with our mission to help remote workers and digital nomads seek inspiring work from anywhere experiences around the world. Last week, we soft launched the new way we're accomplishing that mission with our new website where you can book remote work day passes that blend work and play in inspiring hospitality spaces all around the world, like restaurants, hotels, and cafes, and get awesome experiences, perks, or food and beverage included in the price, plus a time guarantee of how long you can stay and work remotely. Learn more and book passes at adventurely.app. Here on the podcast, we're going to be exploring the intersection of remote work, flexible living, travel, and digital nomadism. In each episode, we're going to dive into insightful conversations with seasoned remote workers, entrepreneurs, and experts living the work from everywhere lifestyle, and also tune in on the specificities of the experience of working from everywhere in specific regions. For this first episode, we're going to be speaking with Han Talbot and her experience working remotely in Cascais, Portugal. Han is a freelance marketer from the UK with a focus on strategy, events, and content creation for a range of businesses. And then she shares her personal story of being a freelancer doing this kind of work while traveling the world at hanmeetsworld.com on the web and also at hanmeetsworld on socials. Han additionally has her own podcast called the Remote Life Podcast. And the Remote Life Podcast has a complimentary LinkedIn newsletter, which we highly suggest you follow, called the Remote Creatives. Han, welcome. How are you?
Hello. I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. I'm excited to speak with you because you've been doing this work from anywhere lifestyle for a while now, and you've documented it. You have awesome resources that people can learn from. And yeah, we're just thrilled to have you on the show. Where are you today?
I'm currently in the UK.
Is that a normal thing for you these days to be back in the UK?
Well, by total chance, this is the first time I've been back since Christmas. So yeah, I suppose it's probably possibly the longest I've gone without checking in back here, I guess. No, it's slightly different to normal. Yeah.
You know, a big portion of this podcast is to inspire people who are sitting on the fence of whether they should take their work on the road or they should even become their own boss. And you've embodied those two things. I had a chance to read through some of your blogs on handmeetsworld.com.
Oh, snap.
Oh, snippity snap. And there was one article I read that had such a profound quote. And it's from a 2019 blog called Going Freelancer, Your Questions Answered.
Oh.
And the quote said, "The fancy dream result does not always happen overnight. 9 times out of 10, we just have to pick a place to start and work for it with an unshakable belief that we can do it."
Oh, who wrote that? Stick that on a bumper sticker.
You wrote that. That's you. That's you, Ooh. Ham. It gives shivers, right? I mean, this is definitely some like Oprah, Deepak Chopra type of quote. It definitely is something that hits you. And, you know, this was in 2019, you were a bit younger. Like, where did you get that sort of empowerment to really take over your career that a lot of people maybe are struggling to find?
Damn. So I need a minute for like my own Oprah-ness right now. Yeah. No, where did I find it? I think, yeah, so basically I took the freelance leap, if you will, in early 2019. So that blog will have been sort of my sort of in a journal, because essentially, I don't know if you know this, but I started Han Meets World back in 2016 when I was going from the sort of being told to do the kind of corporate, what we have here, graduate scheme life into, no, actually, I want to completely throw that out the window and do things my way. So I started this blog that kind of documented my process. And I guess that blog was part of my process from going into the corporate life, where I had people telling me that I was essentially crazy, to this is how the freelance world is and what I'm kind of going through. So I guess that was part of my writing that piece. And I guess it's like an accumulation of things. I honestly can't, like, my whole process, my whole like decade or well over a decade in content creation has just been building online my own process and my own portfolio. So it will have been definitely some books that I read. Like, there's one book that I always say to people, and this is where the "home is where my laptop is" quote came from for my brand. There's a book called My Life on the Road that changed my concept of home. The freelancing, I'm sure there will have been something there at some point. I mean, I know I also wrote a bucket list when I was like 23 and thought my life was over. Like, not in like, that sounds so freaking dramatic to say now, but it was more, I wrote this bucket list to, because I was kind of compensating for this want to go and live life, because I felt like I hadn't for like 2 years prior or something like that. And it was, I think the freelance part was just that bucket list being checked off at that point, and knowing that I wasn't going to find that fulfillment until I did that freelance thing. So that's such a long-winded answer to your question, but honestly, it was an accumulation of research, the people I was around, the projects I wanted to do, the lack of fulfillment that I was feeling, that kind of drove that force, if you will, in the end. And I think at that point, so it would have been 3 years of Handmaid's World, there would have been that sort of, well, I've been documenting my life up until this point through this blog, let's keep going with the freelance thing too. So yeah, it was an accumulation of so many different things, to be completely honest with you. Yeah, sorry, I'm still like, who said that guy? Who was that person?
So and in terms of picking the place to start, what was the start of that journey for you where you're like, okay, I'm going to design a life where I can work for myself and I can work from anywhere. I can take this on the road to Egypt, to Mexico, to Qashqai, to wherever. What was that starting place like, let's say, for the first 6 months?
Yeah, so obviously, so technically I've been on off remote for 10 years anyway. It all really started when I was doing my study abroad in Brazil in 2013, 2014. And I figured out that there were different people, you know, these people we now call YouTubers, who were living this lifestyle. So I was already starting to watch people do this. There are so many people, like, you know, back in 2015, 2016, that I was watching do the, I don't know if you remember the trend from back then of people being like, here's 1 second of every year when I quit my job or something like that. There was a whole trend that went around online. So for a while, I tried the lifestyle on in London first. So I really like did everything to make sure that full-time work and travel was exactly what I wanted to do. So I really did the working from, you know, having my base in London, but then going to different co-work spaces, or at one point I worked between London and Oxford. So I was really getting a taste for that. I was doing trips away on the weekend just to try and again, see if that sort of satiation for like of wanderlust could be satiated that way.
This is with a freelance job, right?
So that was full time, funnily enough. And then the freelance thing, I really didn't get very much into it. It literally was less than a year before the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So I was on a contract when I first started freelancing that kind of meant that was still half in London and then half working from home. And I negotiated it that way because of how I operate, like, within my work professionally. But for me, it really got to the point where I was like, no, I'm loving the fact that I can obviously do half and half, but what I need, not just for like my clients, but also for myself and how I operate, is to go full time. And the pandemic kind of just gave me that, kind of weirdly pushed me very much into that. And I guess the way I decided it was I wanted to pick destinations first that lit me up, and that's kind of how I always did it from there. So my very first destination, and that was the first one out once lockdowns had been lifted, I had all the right vaccinations, and I went to Madrid. That was the first workplace because that was one of the first places that was starting to open up for Brits, and then it kind of went from there. So it was very much sort of picking places that I love and missed going to, but also then became a mixture of countries that I'd heard about but had never really thought about going to. And it did depend at the time for me about like flights that I could get. So I remember when I first went to Croatia, The only way I could get to Croatia, I think, at the time, without doing a bunch of different random flights, just because of that was the time, was by flying directly to Ljubljana in Slovenia and getting the train to Zagreb. So it was just, it was all very kind of weird back then. Like, lockdowns were just about lifting. And really, it sort of was, it was dependent on country restrictions. And yeah, just a whole bunch of other things that I guess now feel very far away, I suppose.
So a lot of people who are thinking of becoming an independent worker, so that they can work from home or they can work on the road, their biggest concern is to getting to a place of financial sustainability. I'll personally say, you know, before I launched Eventually, I had my own law practice in New York, and I'll be quite honest, it humbly took me about 5 years to reach to a point of sustainability financially. And I'm just curious, what do you think would be realistic benchmarks or advice you would give to somebody about the financial aspects of getting to a place of sustainability wherever you're going to work, when you're going to be freelance or work for yourself?
I don't know if you're going to like my answer, but I think it varies for everybody, because for one, I would say if you're considering the remote life, location independent lifestyle, first of all, I would test that thing out again. I very much had my base in London for years before I even took the leap into full-time work and travel. Figure out whether the location independent lifestyle is for you. That's the first thing. The second thing is, you don't have to necessarily quit your job. I think also that's another massive stereotype that people think about digital nomads, is that we're going, quit your 9 to 5 and travel the world. No, that's not it. That's not what we're at. A lot of us are actually pushing. If you have a job that you enjoy, amazing, awesome. You don't have to necessarily quit it. If you can negotiate with your boss or your manager or whoever it is, and also that it, making sure that it is in compliance with absolutely everything that it needs to be, go for that too. Give that a go. Like, so many more companies are allowing employees to take month-long workations or week-long workations, and they don't have to necessarily, again, be abroad. It could be 10 minutes down the road. Like, yeah, it doesn't have to be this grand thing that you commit to. So I think it's more about looking at why you want to be, like, why you want to get into this lifestyle to begin with, and then operating from there and start, you know, there's so many YouTube videos, there are so many books now that you can read of people, different people's experiences. That blog post I wrote back in 2019, I wrote because there was basically next to no information about available, or at least readily available, for people who are taking the freelance, like, route. So, but now there are so many different people giving accounts online of how they did things. So do your research first and start creating a plan from there. My route was different, your route was different. I think, yeah, there's no one path.
Yeah, no. exactly. And one more question, just about your just general freelance life outside of travel, before we get to the travel part of it. There was, and I can't find the exact blog, but there was another blog on handmaidsworld.com where you were talking about passive income streams and how you had tried a few different types, from teaching a foreign language to stickers and to affiliate links. Like, and I'm just curious, like, what was your experience overall, your takeaway from trying these different passive income streams to complement the main work you do, which is working as a marketer and doing, you know, events and content creation for clients?
What my main takeaway, I think, so again, any person who, well, I said definitely content creators, and a lot of freelancers will tell you to diversify your income. That's just a common thing, especially after the pandemic, when you just don't know what's going to happen or, like, what's around the corner. Diversifying your income is such a big thing to consider now, which is why I say, like, when it comes to whether you, you know, how you become financially free, I'm afraid you can't really put, but, well, there's no one route to it. But I would say that, because I, funnily enough, listening to you saying that stuff again, I've actually been trying all those different things again, but in a very different way. You know, I learned from it the first time, and I'm doing it in a much different kind of format and strategy this time. So my takeaway is, diversifying your income is important, as super important. Again, do your research and see what works for you. But I'd say it's super, super mega important, being where we are now.
you know, it's nice for me personally to come across content that is encouraging people to try these different avenue streams for revenue that you can do to supplement your income. The one thing that I'm always concerned with is sometimes they make it look too easy. Mm. These things require a bit of time to get going. I know people who make a killing with money when it comes to, they have an affiliate link business or, you know, whatever it is they're doing. But it takes time. It's not a get rich quick overnight thing, you know?
No. It's hilarious. It's called passive income. It's almost like it's active income until it becomes passive is probably the better name for it. It's active until it's passive because, like, yeah, you have to some extent, you've got to write that blog post that affiliate link goes in. You've got to push it behind, you know, the stories to make sure that people are aware. It's definitely marked, and I 100% know who you mean. There are so many TikToks that go, here's how I made like X amount of money last month, and you can too. And don't get me wrong, I'm sure there are people who like probably jumped on a trend and did it very well, and they had the right audience for these things. But again, it's just about doing your research and figuring out, you know, what passive income works for you. You know, for me, I couldn't manage an Airbnb right now. Yeah, that's just not going to work out feasibly for me. But, you know, I can include affiliate links in my content and talk about that, so because it makes total sense for my community. So, it's figuring out what passive income that's active income that could become passive works best for you.
Yeah, and I think it ties back to that very profound quote, you know, the fancy dream result does not always happen overnight. You just got to pick a place to start.
I'm going to sticker read that.
I think that should be your next sticker. Okay. So we're gonna steer this conversation now to taking your work on the road. Tell me some of the countries and cities just around the world, just a non-exhaustive list that stick out in your mind that you've done this lifestyle in.
Oh God, where do we start?
Let's start in Europe.
See, I've actually kept to Europe mostly for the last couple of years by total chance. So let's start with, I suppose, so most recently I have been to Tirana. I've been to Albania. So Tirana, Durrës, thanks to your recommendation, Vlora. I was in Tbilisi in Georgia. Istanbul and Turkey. There have been a few places. Well, this is like reciting my alphabet backwards. Where else? Yeah, so I did a couple of projects in Spain last year, Croatia. Goodness me, so much has happened since then.
I mean, and just for the people who are listening, this isn't like one-off trips. This woman does this full time on the road. You also spent some time in Mexico City, I saw, which is very, very popular place. What are some of the things that you think would be helpful for somebody who wants to try, like tips for going place to place? It doesn't matter what place, but just some tips and routines, advice that you would give to somebody that's like, okay, I want to go from A to B to C to D. What would be your advice to them?
I'm guessing I'm like a broken record, but honestly, again, it's make sure that it's the lifestyle for you first. Because what's funny is that even when I was working full time, I somehow was looking back at my diary or my stories or something back when I was full time not that long ago. And there was definitely several points in my full-time employment life where I was in like three cities in 1 week and didn't blink an eyelid. So that's what I mean by like, it's got to be something that you think you know you can for yourself try and you can commit to. And figuring out ways to, again, keep that routine or those non-negotiables while you're moving along. So I think that's it, it's the same with freelancing as well as it is with digital nomading. You've got to almost become the lifestyle. If you can make the lifestyle look easy, then you've done your job, but it is a whole other level of self-awareness and hyper-awareness of self, and you've got to get so comfortable with yourself, you know, knowing what, like, when you're feeling tired, knowing when you are feeling whatever it is, uncomfortable, knowing when you are, you need a break, just small things that we haven't really, well, I never really had to think about too much beforehand until I did this lifestyle. So I guess number one would be do your research, and number two would be get to know yourself on another level, because you are going to be with yourself this entire time. And if you can't keep up health-wise, mentally and physically, you're going to burn out and you're going to hate like what you're doing. So yeah, that would be my first step.
Yeah, because there's a different type of burnout that can happen when you're, I think when you're doing this on the road, I call it nomadic burnout. I remember when I went to Bali and I got to Canggu, and a friend of mine, like the first week, they were like, oh, hey, Mita, did you do XYZ and ABC? And I'm like, no, I'm just home for the first week. I personally just like to get grounded the first couple weeks. Like, I'll go out, but I'm not doing too much because I just want to get into a routine for work, because I feel like this lifestyle, it's grounded with a baseline of work. So
yeah,
I don't know. Do you do the most when you get to a new place, or do you sort of ease in? Like, what, how do you approach like settling into a new nomadic destination?
It was really funny when you said about your friends in Canggu. I was thinking exactly the same about Mexico City. I spent 5 weeks in Mexico City, and it was, I remember a couple of friends saying to me, oh my God, you're going to go to Oaxaca, you're going to go to Puerto Vallarta, you're going to go to like down south. And I was like, what? I literally, 5 weeks was just about enough to feel like I was getting to know like a couple of the neighborhoods. So I probably started by doing too much, like especially when I only did like 2 weeks in one place, especially as a content creator. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to go to this place, I've got to go to this place, I've got to like do all the things. And don't get me wrong, obviously there's a part of my brain that still goes, right, I really should take myself out and do some content today. But I definitely take at least the first week, especially this last chapter, so 2024. I could say easily for Albania, for Tbilisi and Turkey, I 100% that first week did next to nothing except for just get into a routine, like you said. But it took some working, like getting there, because I guess I wanted to get to that point where I didn't just all of a sudden become a nomad. I lived abroad a couple of times before I graduated. And so for me, I always try to make sure that I'm trying to be in that local vibe as quickly as possible. So that's an important factor for me. If I feel like I'm really getting a sense of the local vibe, then I've done this trip right. So 100%, yeah, that first week or the first couple of days, I always make sure I try to like ground myself, like you said.
So now we're gonna focus on the destination that is sort of the highlight of this episode, which is Qashqai, Portugal. Portugal has become one of the top coveted destinations for digital nomads and remote workers. And of course, Lisbon, the capital city, is where a lot of people are immediately drawn to. Outside of Lisbon, only a short train ride away is Qashqai, which is by the beach. It offers a variety of historic monuments, villas, museums. It's a very pretty place to go to. It's a little bit bougie. You gotta like a little bit of bouge. And I actually had a chance to catch up with Han in person there last summer. So we're going to like talk a little bit about Qashqai. What was your first impression of Qashqai when you got there to work remotely as a digital nomad last year?
Well, funnily enough, I didn't know this until I actually arrived and spent a couple of weeks there, but they're actually like trying to push Qashqai as a bit of a workation destination, or at least there was a bit of a push for it. And I think, honestly, my first impression was loved it. Absolutely loved it. Especially when you think that, okay, if you're craving a bit more, it's very much sort of talked, I guess, sort of described as like part of the Portuguese Riviera. It's sort of the Cannes of like Portugal, because there are loads of presidents, celebrities, who all like vacation there. So it is like, as you said, a bit more bougie. And I guess for me at the time, that is exactly what I was looking for. I was in town for an event, and I thought, you know, rather than staying in like main city Lisbon, I'll try somewhere a little bit further. And I'd heard bits and pieces about like Qashqai as a town. And I definitely, I didn't have expectations, but it definitely was just, yeah, mind blowing. I fell in love with it as soon as I arrived, to be honest.
And for somebody who's neither been to Lisbon and has neither been to Qashqai, what would you say is the difference between these two destinations?
Yeah, so I guess if you're looking for an artistic city vibe, I would pick Lisbon. And if you're looking for more of the like relaxed sort of beachside vibes, but then wanting, for example, the access to Lisbon, like you said, it's a 30-40 minute train ride into the city. So it's just that kind of, whether you're looking for the more like the busier city vibe or around you straight away with access to the beach for a day or a weekend or whatever it is, or if you're looking for more of that beach, brunchy beachside vibes, and then with access to the city.
For somebody that's arriving into Lisbon on a flight, do you think it's difficult to get from Lisbon Airport to Qashqai? What was your experience with that?
Oh gosh, no. It depends on how you prefer to travel and want to travel. So for me, I took a transfer, and I think it was like a 30-minute drive. And then you can get Ubers as well if you really want to. You can also get I don't know if there's a train that goes directly to Qashqai, or if there's one that passes through Lisbon on the way to it, or you just have to possibly change. I think it's probably one of the more convenient, like, there's just so much more convenience in it there as a destination, I'd say.
Describe to me a perfect day working remotely in Qashqai.
Funnily enough, it depends on where you're starting. So, for example, I had the opportunity to stay with them at Luna House co-living. So if I was like starting the day at Luna House, I would first of all get some of their yummy breakfast. It would then ease into the day by maybe using their co-work space downstairs, perhaps taking a lunchtime walk towards the town or the beach, because it's about 10-15 minute drive from walk from there. If I was staying in my own apartment, I would start pretty much the same. So again, start the day with a coffee, maybe a bit of breakfast, get those emails done, the sort of, because for me, I get probably more my productive work done during the morning. So I would maybe take the morning to do that kind of work, take a wander down. I always try to make sure that I get out the house during the day just to sort of break things up. So whether that's going to the beach, and again, depending on where you stay, that can be anything between like a 10 minutes to 30 minutes walk to the beach, to the town, have a coffee, maybe get a bit of lunch, come back, and I would finish my day. But I know some people would maybe stay out and work from a cafe, or find someone that's got good Wi-Fi. I will say, actually, for Qashqai, make sure you've got your hotspot as well. That came in handy a lot more times than I thought it would. And then that would end again, maybe meeting up, maybe making sure my work was finished for the day, taking some calls. The day honestly varies for me. Then I would maybe have dinner with friends or back at the apartment, and maybe then go check out what's going on in the evening, or again meet up with people, or just be back home watching Netflix and YouTube.
What I loved most about Qashqai was just how pretty, it's glamorous.
Yeah.
It's by the beach, everything is blue and white. Everyone's dressed in these nice linen outfits, looking chic, and they're dining outside. Talk to me a little bit about the food. What was your impression of the food in Qashqai?
What's so funny also is that I've noticed that a lot of the community there knows each other. Yeah. I didn't realize there was one time I was actually sat on the beach having my little coffee, and there was a woman with her family in front of me, and like everyone kept stopping to say hi to her, and I was like, oh, maybe she's like this sort of figure in the community. Well, about 2 weeks later, I by chance was walking through the town, and it turned out she was this local fashion designer. Mm-hmm. And they were having one of her fashion shows in the middle of the town. And it was just the most cutest thing to see people turning up for this little, it was literally a fashion show for, I think she must have been like swimwear or something like that. And that was just for me, one of the things I love so much about smaller towns and like smaller like cities, I guess, is just that sort of community vibe. So that's just one example I think of why I love it as a destination. But to go back to the food, I'm vegetarian. So even as a vegetarian, I freaking loved it. There was so many different places you could eat. They had plenty of supermarkets you could buy different things. And of course, yeah, pastéis de nata are always going to be welcome on my plate. So yeah, I think Portugal was 100%, even as a vegetarian, 100% one of my favorite places to eat out, as well as cook. You've always got so many different alternatives. They also, in the supermarkets, you'll have stuff from Spain, from Italy, from like different places in South America. It's 100% one of my favorite places to eat, for sure.
One of the other things that I really love about visiting Qashqai is how walkable it is, and enjoying that walk along the beach up to Estoril. Did you enjoy walk? Did you take advantage of that? Did you find yourself walking around a lot?
So I stayed somewhere near that station. Yeah, it was somewhere between Estoril and it was a something do Estoril. I can't remember what the full name was, but I stayed. So essentially I had two routes walking into Cascais, and that was along that promenade for like 10, 15 minutes to the old town or to go along the main road. And obviously you can imagine which one I picked. But yeah, it was absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Hans, so much for taking the time to speak with us about your journey and becoming a freelancer and then taking your work on the road and then taking your work on the road to Qashqai. Are there any last updates that you'd like to share with our listeners about new or upcoming initiatives from you or the remote life?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, thank you for having me. And second of all, I am building on the remote creative. So, of course, I would love for people to go listen to the remote life and come say hi at Hand Meets World on all the things. Also, yes, I have the remote creatives newsletter, and I'm building out a whole website for creative digital nomads and guides for creative digital nomad destinations. So when that's live, come and say hi.
Thanks again, Han, and remember, hit us up at eventually.app.